from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, happy February to you, if there is such a thing. And maybe there is in Pakistan. You know, our friend, our ally, our friend, they're cracking down in the way that only the Pakistanis can crack down, apparently. A dozen Pakistani policemen, according to Bloomberg News, stood watch last week outside a Lahore mosque. It's the name of a city. Don't get nervous. The mosque is known to be a stronghold of the Lashkar-e-Taiba guerrilla group. The group has been linked to the attacks in Mumbai, India. Inside, the imam preached jihad to thousands of worshippers. The police presence was part of Pakistan's vow to curb the guerrilla group, which India blames for the Mumbai attack, and it showed how limited that effort has been as the officers heard the sermon blaring over loudspeakers. Part of what they heard was him demanding more attacks on India. Nobody can stop us, he said, from fighting India. Pakistan's offensive, its crackdown, is halting and partial at best, says a Lahore-based analyst and author of books on Pakistan and Islamic militancy. Fewer leaders have been arrested and fewer of the schools closed than the national government claims, according to provincial figures, because the country's politically dominant army has cultivated Lashkar, and other groups to help control to help confront India over the disputed territory of Kashmir. Quote, there is not going to be any sudden U-turn in policy, said the analyst. I don't expect a proper crackdown, unquote. So we'll have to make do with the improper one, ladies and gentlemen, which, you know, in these tough times. Now, clean safe, too cheap to meter. As France presses ahead with building more next-generation nuclear reactors, new evidence emerged this week to suggest that industry and governments may be unprepared to handle the increasingly toxic waste that will result, says the International Herald Tribune, highlighting the importance of the technology to France both as its main source of electricity and as a major export industry. President Sarkozy announced this week that Électricité de France, Europe's biggest power producer, was awarded the contract to develop a second atomic reactor using next-generation technology. Forget about this generation. It's the next. It's got to be good. It's got to be cleaner, cheaper, safer. But an anti-nuclear group said that information it gleaned from industry reports publicly available, which have received little attention so far, show that waste from the new next-generation reactors will be, guesses, more radioactive, less radioactive, not radioactive at all? Okay, those of you who guessed, more radioactive. By a factor of 7, you win. Because more uranium is burned up in the new next-generation reactors that will make it more expensive to handle and store safely, according to Greenpeace, which provided the details to the International Herald Tribune. Despite the French government's global marketing of the EPR, the European power reactor, as cheap and safe, the evidence proves otherwise, says a campaigner for Greenpeace. A spokesman for Areva, the French nuclear company, says the claim by Greenpeace was grossly inaccurate. She said the waste would be 15% more radioactive at most. So they agree it's going to be more radioactive waste. The waste will be more radioactive. And we have all these technologies for dealing with the waste, starting with, I have a letter here from, an email actually, from a listener named Stephen. This was about the item last week on white phosphorus being used by the Israelis in the Gaza attack, and the fact that many spokespeople for both the Israelis and the United Nations say that white phosphorus is cool, it's legal, if it's used to set up a smoke screen for troops. It's not legal when it's just dropped on civilians and burns through their skin all the way to the bone the way it does, because you can't stop it from burning once it's been... Anyway, Stephen writes, Dear Harry, we used white phosphorus shells in Vietnam, and they are different from smoke. Smoke is used to mark a site or where the round will land if you're supporting infantry. White phosphorus is used to burn through and ignite all material it touches. It can't be extinguished, so if it landed on a child or any person, a dot the size of a dime would burn through the body until it hit the ground, where it would burn until it burnt out. They're being misleading to say it's smoke. I work in a public school. Signed, Stephen. And finally, at the top of the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen, we got the driver, now we got the cook. Yes, it's the worst of the worst at Guantanamo. What did you think? A federal judge ruled this week that the government may continue to detain a 29-year-old Yemeni at Guantanamo. Judge Richard Leon said the government had met its burden in alleging that Ghaleb al-Bihani was an enemy combatant who supported al-Qaeda and the Taliban. The government said that he stayed at Taliban and al-Qaeda guest houses. Wow. Probably bought pay movies while he was there. Trained at al-Qaeda-affiliated camps and supported the Taliban. His attorneys argue their client was a cook for the Taliban and never fired a weapon. But the judge said that, quote, helping prepare the meals, unquote, for Taliban forces, it was enough to justify his continued detention. Quoting from Napoleon, the judge said, an army marches on its stomach, and it rides thanks to its drivers. The worst of the worst, ladies and gentlemen. Hello, welcome to the show.
Seth Shapiro got his law degree. He moved to Brooklyn from Schenectady, 93. Got some clients in the food industry. He says it's not the money, it's the recipes. He calls his mom, says he's doing fine. She's got somebody on the other line. Puts Coldplay on, pours a glass of wine. He curls up with a book about organized crime. Contacts out of her eyes. Sets the alarm for 6:45 so she can get a little exercise.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. 26th year of disservice to the community, ladies and gentlemen, and now...
He's not a general.
He commands no troops.
He's not an inspector.
He peeks at no stoops.
He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah. Army Secretary Pete Guerin, who knew, has ordered the recall of more than 16,000 sets of body armor. Yeah, they had 16,000 of them. They weren't the best sets of body armor. Apparently, according to an audit that concluded that the bullet blocking plates in the vests failed tests and may not provide soldiers with adequate protection. But they do add needed weight. The audit by the Office of the Defense Department Inspector General has not yet been made public, but was obtained by the Associated Press. It faults the Army for flawed testing procedures before awarding a contract for the armor. But those were the grown-ups. In a letter dated to the Acting Inspector General, the Army Secretary said he did not agree that the plates failed the tests or that the soldiers were issued deficient gear. He said his opinion was backed by the Pentagon's top testing director. That is to say, the Pentagon says the Pentagon did okay. Despite that, Guerin said he was recalling the body armor as a precaution. That's right. He says they're good body armor suits, but he's going to take them away from the troops just to make sure they're safe. He also says he's asked for a senior Pentagon official to resolve the disagreement between the Army and the Inspector General's office. He's asking the Pentagon to weigh in on whether the Pentagon is right or the Pentagon's Inspector General is right. Hundreds of thousands of body armor sets have been manufactured by nearly a dozen different companies over the past 7 years. The vests are now standard gear for troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now standard. You remember how long they weren't. The audit was requested by Representative, this is unfortunate, Louise Slaughter, Democrat of New York. News of the Inspectors General, ladies and gentlemen, copyrighted feature of this broadcast. How's the global war on terror going? Well, incoming legal and national security officials, barred until the inauguration from examining classified material on the Gitmo detainees, discovered that there were no comprehensive case files on many of them. Instead, they found that information on individual prisoners is scattered throughout the executive branch, a senior administration official told the Washington Post. The executive order Obama signed this week orders the prison closed within a year. But several former Bush administration officials agreed that the files are incomplete and that no single government entity was charged with pulling together all the facts and the range of options for each prisoner. They said the CIA and other intelligence agencies were reluctant to share information. How many years is this since 9/11, since they were told to connect the dots, and that the Bush administration's focus on detention and interrogation made preparation of prosecutions a low priority? Other former officials took issue with the criticism and suggested the new team has just begun to appreciate the complexities. Charles B. Culley Stimson, who was Deputy Assistant Defense Secretary for Detainee Affairs, that's right, they're allowed to have affairs, in 2006 and 7, said he had persistent problems in attempting to assemble all information on individual cases. Threats to recommend the release or transfer of a detainee were often required, he said, to persuade the CIA to, quote, cough up a sentence or two, unquote. A second former Pentagon official said most individual files are heavily summarized dossiers that do not contain the kind of background and investigative work that would be put together by a prosecution team. He described regular food fights among different parts of the government over information sharing on the detainees. A CIA spokesman said, I was simply wrong. The main point here is that not all documents are physically located in one place, said a Pentagon spokesman. There have been indications from within and outside the government for some time, says the Post, that evidence and other materials on the Gitmo prisoners were in disarray, even though most of the detainees have been held for years. Justice Department lawyers responding in federal courts to defense challenges over the past 6 months have said repeatedly the government was overwhelmed by the sudden need to assemble material after the Supreme Court ruled that the detainees had habeas corpus rights. In one federal filing, the Justice Department said, quote, the record is not simply a collection of papers sitting in a box at the Defense Department. It is a massive undertaking just to produce the record in this one case. Some former official said military lawyers lack the trial experience to prosecute complex international terrorism cases. A former military prosecutor at Gitmo said evidence was strewn throughout the prosecution office in desk drawers, bookcases packed with vaguely labeled plastic containers, or even simply piled on the tops of desks. But the global war on terror is ratcheting up, arriving at Gitmo. Senator David Vitter, Republican of Louisiana. He has introduced legislation barring the release of any detainees into U.S. communities. Send them to Yemen. He wants to ask officials there about options to ensure that dangerous terrorists aren't simply released and tried. Vitter says it's clear there aren't simple answers, but he does hope that among the detainees at Gitmo are at least a couple of prostitutes. Doesn't it just seem like we went through this with the Chinese? Companies building facilities for the 2012 London Olympics are being forced to sign draconian gagging orders, according to a BBC London investigation. Olympic bosses are making firms sign contracts which prevent them from talking publicly about all details of their work for 6 years. That's an Olympic record. If a leak is suspected, the contract allows the Olympic Delivery Authority to search a firm's premises and emails. And their Gatorade. The authority said the contracts were a standard confidentiality agreement, but BBC's London Olympics correspondent says the companies I've talked to are shocked they have to sign a document which effectively allows 2012... the Olympic Organizing Committee, to walk into their premises and start searching them. Legal experts have told the BBC these new contracts are draconian. The gagging orders have been in place for at least 6 months. The six-year ban on disclosing information is regarded as being particularly tough. BBC asked the organizers of the 2010 Vancouver Winter Olympics, I'm so sorry about that, kids, whether they had imposed similar widespread restrictions on firms in Canada. Are there firms in Canada? And were told emphatically that they had not. Firms sign away the right to talk to any third party without the Olympic Delivery Authority's permission about technical plans, the cost of venues, a project's progress, environmental issues, health and safety measures, and any discussions with the government. The contract says companies and their subcontractors must not, quote, do anything which would have an adverse effect on or embarrass any games body or any supporter of the games or official sponsor, unquote. They must reimburse the Olympic Delivery Authority for any costs or liabilities arising from any breach of contract, including all legal costs. The contract sounds like it was written by Fox. You know, the lie to me people. The most controversial clause adds, quote, for the purpose of investigating any breach or threatened or possible breach, the company, that is to say the private firm, will allow the Olympic Delivery Authority direct access upon demand to any of its premises or information which may contain confidential information or any communications with any third parties in respect of confidential information. The spirit of the games is alive. And by the way, the air quality in London is too polluted to meet European Union standards and needs an extension to comply with European environmental rules. Air in the city contains too many small particles. Worse than Beijing. And, in a related development, Officials in Chicago, in charge of that city's 2016 Olympic bid, swear on a stack of Bibles no public money will be spent. The Bibles have been sent out for investigation. Now, they say it's all going to be private, which means the Olympic sponsors will get to search any company in Chicagoland. Because it's about greatness and excellence. Oh, that was exciting. Now, ladies and gentlemen, let's check in on Afghanistan, shall we? Defense Secretary Robert Gates this week signaled sharply lower expectations for the war in Afghanistan. Lower than mine? Babe, call me. Quick. He warns the conflict will be a long slog. Do you recognize those words? It's wacky. That's what Donald Rumsfeld, after, stuff happened, that's how he described Iraq. Long slog. Gates says U.S. and allied military forces, even at higher levels, like they're going to send, can only achieve limited goals. Are they preparing us for something? Gates said the U.S. military will be sending the additional troops to address a security vacuum that increasingly has been filled by the Taliban. Wonder why that is. Wonder why. He warned he would be deeply skeptical of any further U.S. troop increases, saying that Afghan soldiers and police must take the lead, in part so the Afghan public does not turn against U.S. forces as it has against foreign troops throughout history. Now, that's nice that he's reading history. Nice that he knows we're trying to beat the odds. Trying to do with the Brits and the Soviets and Alexander the Great. Hey, those are three biggies, but they ain't us. What they did. The U.S. force in Afghanistan numbers about 36,000. Well, that should be enough. There's little doubt that our greatest military challenge right now is Afghanistan, Gates said, marking the formal shift in priorities away from Iraq. This is going to be a long slog, he says, and frankly, my view is that we need to be very careful about the nature of the goals we set for ourselves in Afghanistan. If we set ourselves the objective of creating some sort of Central Asian Valhalla over there, we will lose because nobody in the world has that kind of time, patience, and money. Valhalla in Norse mythology is a great hall where heroes slain in battle are received. Civilian casualties resulting from U.S. combat and airstrikes have been particularly harmful to progress in Afghanistan and must be avoided, Gates stressed. My worry is that the Afghans come to see us as part of their problem rather than part of their solution. And then we are lost, he said. So watch for the lost-o-meter. How about color coding? Moreover, he says, the U.S. military must immediately voice regret for any civilian casualties rather than waiting to investigate the details. Gates said this is necessary to counter Taliban insurgents who, he said, hide among the population and sneakily report civilian deaths in coalition military operations quickly and widely on the Internet. The instant we believe there may have been civilian casualties, we have to be out there expressing condolences rather than arguing over the numbers, said Gates. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, where is out there? I hear that all the time. You know, the answers are out there. We have to be out there. Well, there's a lot of opposition out there. Where is it? If you have a location, please let me know. Gates also warned of Iranian interference in Afghanistan. Yeah, that is their neighborhood too. Isn't that wild? Roadside bomb and suicide attacks in Afghanistan have increased an estimated 40% over last year. How's the political situation over there? It's good. It's real good. Afghanistan is postponing its presidential election until August 20th, about 4 months later than the date specified in the Constitution. But, you know, Constitution, we had one of those. The purpose to give incoming U.S. forces more time to stabilize the country's most violent regions. Opposition lawmakers in Afghanistan decried the delay and said they won't recognize Hamid Karzai as president after May 22nd, his last constitutional day in office. That's a good omen. And over in Iraq, ladies and gentlemen, I do not believe in conspiracy theories for the simple reason that I myself have tried to organize groups of humans to achieve, you know, a limited objective and have found it basically a fool's errand. So even with the threat of death, which I didn't have, you know, at my disposal, I find it hard to believe that a group larger than three persons can hold it together for very long. Nonetheless, that being said, this raises at least the question of timing. 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 The Iraqi government this week informed the United States Embassy in Baghdad this week, you know, like a week after the change in administration, that the Iraqi government will not issue a new operating license to Blackwater Worldwide. Just a nutty coincidence. These things grow on the nutty coincidence farm. Blackwater, of course, has come under scrutiny for allegedly using excessive force while protecting American diplomats. Iraq's Interior Ministry conveyed its decision to U.S. officials in Baghdad on Friday. One of the boldest moves the government has made. Blackwater employees who have not been accused of improper conduct will be allowed to continue working as private security contractors in Iraq if they switch employers. So it's not the people, it's the company, according to the Iraqis. Blackwater must leave the country as soon as a U.S.-Iraqi joint committee finishes drawing up guidelines for private contractors under the new security agreement. It's unclear how long that'll take. Up to now, Blackwater employees have been immune under so-called Iraqi law propounded by that famous Iraqi L. Paul Bremer. The United States was unable to persuade the Iraqi government to extend the immunity of its contractors past the expiration of the Security Council resolution December 31st. The North Carolina company became widely despised by Iraqis after a string of incidents during which its heavily armed guards were accused of using excessive force. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Washington last month charged five of the Blackwater employees with voluntary manslaughter in the most severe incident. The Ministry of Interior revoked Blackwater's license way back in September 2007 and threatened to expel the company's employees then, but U.S. officials, this is interesting, ignored the order and renewed the company's contract the following April. That's the respect you give to a nascent young democracy, you see. Iraqi officials said this week they decided not to issue the company a new license, largely because of that shooting for which five Blackwater employees are now standing trial. And what I say, send them to Afghanistan.
Club has closed you so tight. All night long you really be blowing hot. No caps, they're all hot. Wonder where people are going. Feel the pop. As you walk, you wanna hide before the dawn. But Sunday's here when you're there. What are you thinking to do when you got no friends that don't care? Whether you're winning or losing, it's awful bad. You're feeling sad, you wanna hide, but then the dawn breaks. And today becomes tomorrow. Not a penny can you borrow. People busy all around you. If they only knew, then maybe you could lose your sorrow. Cause you really need a good break. And you feel so bad, your heart aches. But later in the evening, when the shadows fall, you're really gonna let your heart sing.
is here and you're there. What are you thinking to do when you got no friends, they don't care? Whether you win or lose, it's awful bad. You're feeling sad, you wanna hide, but then the dawn breaks. And today becomes tomorrow. Not a penny can you borrow. People busy all around you. If they only knew that maybe you could lose a sorrow. Cause you really need a good friend. And you feel so bad, your heart aches. Maybe later in the evening, when the shadows fall, you really gonna let your heart sing.
This is Le Show, and more on Clean, Cheap, Safe. Dateline Montpelier, Vermont. That's right. We changed the pronunciation when we brought it over here. It was Montpellier. But that was the French way of doing things. An Entergy nuclear official. Entergy is a power company. Interestingly enough, they're the power company that services New Orleans. And after Katrina, after the flooding that followed Katrina, Entergy USA, which is the only Fortune 500 company headquartered in New Orleans, ordered its local subsidiary, Entergy New Orleans, to go bankrupt rather than have the customers of other Entergy companies in other parts of the country pay a modest increase to pay for the repairs to the infrastructure caused by the flooding. They forced Entergy New Orleans to go bankrupt and just raise the local electricity rate sky high. Anyway, this is Entergy Nuclear, a whole other part of a wonderful company. An official of Entergy Nuclear says the company has replaced several employees following two recent leaks of radioactive waste at the Vermont Yankee nuclear power plant. Well, that's nuclear waste. That can't do nothing to you. Entergy Vice President Jay Thayer apologized to key Vermont lawmakers this week for the two mishaps. They are met with the House Natural Resources and Energy Committee, one of the panels considering Entergy's request to extend the reactor's operating life for another 20 years. The two leaks in January raised concern among lawmakers following problems the plant had with its cooling towers last year. Well, that just keeps the stuff from Thayer told legislators that Entergy has hired a new site vice president. All right, now we're talking. That's going to take care of everything. A new vice. Why didn't NBC think of that? A new general manager, a new operations manager in the wake of the problems. I feel better now. I feel better than James Brown. So the economy is in some kind of a ditch, and the president speaks to that and related subjects, and we carry the address in a first or a second, moments from now here on the show.
Oh, Father dear, I dreamed last night.
Good morning, my fellow citizens. I'm speaking to you once again today about the dire state of our economy. It's not a pleasant subject. Once again, we've seen new figures, new people joining the ranks of the jobless, new corporate layoffs, new statistics reflecting the weakness of the housing and financial markets. And that's just since this morning. Frankly, if our economic situation gets much worse, I may have to start speaking to you twice a day. Now, as you know, this week I already criticized folks in the banking industry for paying themselves large bonuses at a time when so many Americans are feeling the pain and hardship of this recession. Today, I want to mention another example of this lack of responsibility. When Americans sit down in the evenings to watch some television and relax, nothing reminds them of economic hard times more dramatically than seeing, in the place of commercials for nationally distributed products and services by our name brand companies, the specter of a 2-minute infomercial hosted by Billy Mays. Now, let me be clear about this. I have nothing but respect for Mr. Mays personally and for the line of products he promotes. But those commercials clearly and traditionally belong in cable late at night. To see them on major networks in the middle of the evening just reinforces the sense that our economy is out of control. Of course, to reject these commercials for prime time would involve some sacrifice on the part of the networks and on the part of Mr. Mays. But if we're all in this together, we all have to do our part. So today, I'm calling upon the television networks to exercise more responsibility in the scheduling of these commercial messages. And I call upon Mr. Mays, in those commercials of his which do end up being shown in prime time, to refrain from yelling. Obviously, there's a lot more to do to deal with our economic crisis, but this is something we can do. Talk to you tomorrow. This is Le Show, and it's been a very sorry week, which means... An Upland, California city council person apologized this week for making racially insensitive remarks, ending an effort by the mayor and other officials to throw him out. Councilman Ray Musser said he was sorry for statements he made at Monday's council meeting when describing his experience at the inauguration of President Obama. Quote, there was a lot of non-whites in the crowd, well-behaved, and that was so gratifying, unquote, he said at the meeting. The remark caused an outcry, exacerbated when a local newspaper quoted 73-year-old Musser as referring to, quote, colored, unquote, people. The council then scheduled a special meeting to demand his resignation. Musser denied any racial intent. He had first said the mayor, whom he twice ran unsuccessfully against, had targeted him for political reasons, but after meeting with the mayor, he softened his tone. I want to reiterate my sincere apology to anyone who was offended by my choice of words describing the mass of Americans and world leaders at the inauguration, Musser said in a statement. My heart was touched by the inauguration, and I was proud to witness history. And they were so clean. No, he didn't say that. In an interview on CNBC, John Thain, the former Merrill Lynch chairman and chief executive, said that the much-criticized renovations made to his office were done more than a year ago in a different economic environment, and that they needed to be done to bring the offices more in line with the rest of Merrill's decor. Of course, they cost more than $1 million. Merrill is now billions of dollars in the hole. Still, he apologized and said he would reimburse the firm for the costs. After Turkish Prime Minister Erdogan displayed a harsh reaction and then walked out on the panel at Davos, Israeli President Shimon Peres called the Prime Minister by phone and stated, I apologize if I was misunderstood. My aim was not to criticize you personally. I wanted to straighten out the incorrect assessments of Hamas. I have the utmost respect for you and the Turkish public. I apologize if I was misunderstood. Representative Phil Gingrich, Republican of Georgia. How many of his constituents thought they were voting for Gingrich? He apologized this week to my fellow conservatives for comments critical of Rush Limbaugh, saying, no, he sees eye to eye with Limbaugh, and that his remarks defending House Republican leadership came across more harshly than intended. He also took issue with a headline on the story in Politico.com about his original comments, saying he never told Limbaugh to back off, as the headline read. Quote, I regret and apologize for the fact that my comments have offended and upset my fellow conservatives. That was not my intent, Gingrich said in a statement. I'm also sorry to see that my comments in defense of our Republican leadership read much harsher than they actually were intended, but I recognize it is my responsibility to clarify my own comments. He issued the statement because of a high volume of calls and correspondence to his office from ditto heads. Dateline Vatican City, the leader of a traditionalist Catholic movement, apologized to Pope Benedict this week for remarks denying the Holocaust made by one of his members, whom the Pope recently rehabilitated. Bishop Bernard Fellay also said he had disciplined the bishop who made the statement, British-born Richard Williamson, and ordered him not to speak out again on any political or historical issues. And Williamson himself has expressed his sincere regret, asking the pontiff to forgive him for the anguish he has caused him, the pontiff. He apologized for the imprudent phrases he used last week in an interview on Swedish television. He did not, however, specifically withdraw his claim that millions of Jews did not die in Nazi gas chambers. It's just the verbiage, babe. Dateline Melbourne, Australia's military chief, has apologized to actress Tanya Zaeta over false allegations of having sex with troops in war-torn Afghanistan during a concert tour last year. Air Chief Marshal Angus Houston met Zaeta this week to personally apologize for any distress suffered by her. She gave her time and talent to entertain our forces serving in Afghanistan. She deserves our praise and our thanks, he said. He also invited her to entertain the troops again. I don't think entertain is in quotes. I just said it that way. Mayors apologizing, ladies and gentlemen, it's a thing. Hartford, Connecticut Mayor Eddie Perez will walk into a state police barracks and surrender himself on bribery charges, a dramatic step in the corruption probe that has hung over the city and his administration for nearly 2 years. State criminal investigators have circled him since early 2007 regarding parking lot deals. In an interview in the office of his attorney, Perez called his decision to hire a city contractor, Carlos Costa, for a new kitchen counter and a renovated bathroom a lapse in judgment. There is no excuse for it, he says. I apologize for putting my family and my city under this situation. But he added, at the end of the day, a lapse in judgment is not a crime. Well, a homicidal lapse in judgment it might be. Dateline Chattanooga, Chattanooga Mayor Ron Littlefield has apologized to Volkswagen for the unauthorized use of the VW logo on his campaign literature. A postcard mailed to a constituent shows a front door and reads, "Opportunity knocked." He answered. The keyhole is replaced by the VW logo. His campaign mailed 22,000 of those flyers in a written apology this week. The mayor took full responsibility for the action. He said the community as a whole needs to be more careful about using the VW logo. The company is building a production facility in Chattanooga. And the mayor of Phoenix, Arizona, blew his nose into a terrible towel and then threw it to the ground at a send-off rally for the Cardinals in Phoenix beginning of this week. On Tuesday night, he apologized for his actions. Mayor Phil Gordon said at no time did anyone intend in any way to offend the Pittsburgh Steelers organization and their many fans, supporters, and traditions, one of which is the terrible towel. U.S. Senate Sergeant-at-Arms Terrence Gaynor apologized to survivors of the Purple Tunnel of Doom, a Facebook group that met with him this week. He apologized for law enforcement's inability to respond to the chaos which unfolded on Inauguration Day when many people with blue and purple tickets could not get in to the inauguration they had tickets to. He wasn't able to provide many hard answers to the myriad of questions, reflecting the smoldering anger and frustration felt by the thousands of people who, despite holding tickets, were prevented from ever getting to their assigned premium standing areas. Yes, premium standing areas. That's what I said. One question asked repeatedly in different ways was, why in the world were thousands of people forced into a tunnel where they were held for hours on end while history unfolded out of sight above them? Gaynor's answer, the tunnel was never intended to be used. There's too little information on how many people were there, how and why this tunnel was used, and why the group was never merged into the surface lines. All right, then. Dateline Kabul. U.S. commanders this week visited a mountain village in eastern Afghanistan, distributed $40,000 to relatives of 15 Afghan civilians killed by American soldiers last week. Colonel Greg Julian, the top U.S. spokesman in Afghanistan, and the commanders also apologized to the relatives living in the village of Inzeri. He told the Afghans the soldiers opened fire because villagers fired at them. That'll earn our respect, or their respect for us. David Letterman, after more than 15 years since censoring a controversial comedy routine by Bill Hicks, had Mary Hicks, Bill's mother, on the program and apologized to her personally before showing the entire uncensored routine. He filmed it back in October of 1993, did the late Bill Hicks, but was then surprised to discover the entire routine was cut from the pre-tape broadcast. He went to The New Yorker, a writer, John Lahr, who later recounted the controversy in his 1997 book. Letterman responded at the time by saying he regretted how Hicks was treated, but Hicks was never invited back to the show. I know the feeling, babe. Hicks's mother came on to accept Letterman's apology. He told Mary Hicks, "Let me again apologize for the heartache and sadness my decision caused your family." He then played the full bit. Ashton Kutcher, speaking of celebrities, has apologized to his neighbor after calling him a jackass on the radio. And American Idol has apologized for an incident in which judges Simon Cowell and Paula Abdul accused one of the auditioners on the show, a descendant of the doctor who set John Wilkes Booth's broken leg, of threatening them by telling them to be careful as he left the audition. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Speaking of miscreant officials, Rod Blagojevich was impeached this week and was convicted by the Senate. He delivered himself before the conviction of a memorable speech. The only thing he didn't do in the course of the 40 minutes was sing it.
I'm too impatient. And I'm thinking about me, charge it to my heart, charge it.
From outside the bubble. Well, with the economic situation so bad in this country, it takes the Guardian of London to hip us to how bad things are in Europe, especially what Donald Rumsfeld used to call New Europe. Europe's governments are trembling. Revolt is in the air, says the Guardian. Dateline Athens. Students and young people, sick of a lack of prospects and the failings of the education system, mobilized to turn parts of the city into no-go areas. Last week was the turn of farmers, who used tractors to block motorways and border crossings to try to obtain better prices. In Riga, Latvia, the city has not seen anything like it since the days of kicking out the Russians and overthrowing communists. More than 10,000 people converged on the 13th-century cathedral to show the Latvian government what they thought of the politicians' efforts to contain the economic crisis. The peaceful protest morphed into a rampage as a minority headed for the parliament battled police and trashed parts of the old city. Next day, there were similar scenes in Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania. After Iceland, Latvia looks like the most vulnerable country to be hammered by the crisis. The Latvian central bank governor has pronounced the economy, quote, clinically dead. In Budapest, a balance of payments crisis late last year, heavy debt and a disastrous budget made Hungary the first European candidate for international rescue. Hungary's misery highlights the difference between East and West. The East Europeans are broke and pleading for international help, while Britain, Germany, and France plow billions into public spending, tax cuts, and bank bailouts. And then there's Iceland. Riot police in Reykjavik. Bonfires in front of the world's oldest parliament. Yogurt flying in the free market. Men who have run the country for decades and brought it to its knees. The currency, the krona, appears to be finished. Iceland is a test case of how one of the world's most successful societies suddenly failed. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen. A copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Gentlemen, that concludes this week's edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations from London, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, even New Europe, on the USN 440 cable system in Japan, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant, this WBCQ 7.415 megahertz shortwave on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, and around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at KCRW.com. And it'd be just like things getting better, even in New Europe, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much, A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego, Chicago, Pittsburgh, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halstead. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.